WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
In 1968, trumpeter Miles Davis was leading an exploratory jazz group. By 1972, he was playing hardcore funk. In December 1970, Davis's music was somewhere in the middle when he took a band into Washington, D.C.'s Cellar Door for his last recordings in a nightclub setting. A new box set collects most of the music recorded that week. Jazz critic Kevin Whitehead has a review.
When Miles Davis got a wah-wah pedal in 1970, skeptics asked, why not just play electric guitar? After all, the pedal had been invented so guitarists could mimic the wah-wah effects jazz trumpeters got with plunger mute. Miles's wah-wah had a different character, reason enough to justify it, but he did seem intent on remaking his horn as a guitar. He'd attack one note like a flat picker about to break a string. Miles had admired Jimi Hendrix enough to attend his funeral in 1970, and there were moments during the trumpeter's four nights at a Washington club a couple of months later where he sounded like he wanted to be Hendrix, riding a wave of feedback. No jazz musician acted more like a rock star than Miles, cranking up the volume, dressing like a fop, and recording live at the Fillmore. He told Jack DeJohnette to play like Hendrix's drummer, Buddy Miles. A few months before this Washington gig, the trumpeter had replaced jazz bassist Dave Holland with a funky 19-year-old bass guitarist, Michael Henderson, whom he'd stolen from Stevie Wonder. It's still a bit shocking how the trumpeter with a pretty and vulnerable tone embraced the whole loud, distorted electric thing. The crunchy sound of temperamental electric pianos in particular. The keyboard player here is another jazz musician esteemed for his handmade acoustic sound, Keith Jarrett. Jarrett has said he felt like the only member of the band on Davis's wavelength, even if Miles had told bassist Henderson to stay funky and not follow Jarrett into jazz territory. This leads to bizarre moments when the musicians play like they're in different rooms. In this case, Jarrett, Michael Henderson, and the meandering Brazilian percussionist Ayerto. Jarrett's right when he says Davis hadn't totally transformed his jazz group into a funk band, yet. And there were still a few free jazzy freakouts left over from an earlier lineup. So the group pulls in several directions, but it's a mess in a good way, like a Jackson Pollock. Davis had been working this sextet with Gary Bartz on saxophones for a couple of months before they recorded in Washington. A fraction of this music was released in mangled form ages ago on the album Live Evil. That stuff had come from the last of four nights, when guitarist John McLaughlin was plopped into the band. A jazz picker with a raunchy tone, McLaughlin ups the ante while being careful not to step on Jarrett's toes. His lines can sound oddly like what Miles was reaching for on processed trumpet. which goes to show, if you really want to sound like a guitar, get a guitarist. John McLaughlin adds such extra oomph to the last two discs here, we probably don't need four sets of warm-up material from before he showed up. All told, the Miles Davis box, The Cellar Door Sessions, 1970, includes six sets out of the 10 recorded that week. Three or four might have been enough, from an artistic, if not marketing, viewpoint.
Kevin Whitehead teaches English and American Studies at the University of Kansas, and he's a jazz columnist for eMusic.com. He reviewed Miles Davis, The Cellar Door Sessions, 1970.